I should say something else. Apologize again. Reassure her. Comfort her. But I'm terrified she might slap me. Or worse, break down if I approach her. Besides, she's already walking to the door and throwing it open. She doesn't look at me as she waits. Waits for me to leave. Fuck. I screwed up so badly. My heart physically hurts as I stagger to the door. I pause in the threshold, finding the courage to meet her eyes again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you should be.
The last thing I hear as I step out into the hall is the sound of the door slamming behind me. Chapter 13, Logan. I've always refused to use alcohol as a crutch. If I'm sad or upset or hurting, I avoid it at all costs because I'm terrified I might rely too heavily on it one day, that I might become addicted. But goddamn, I could really use a drink right now. Fighting the urge, I bypass the liquor cabinet in my living room and sprint to the sliding door in the kitchen. Cigarettes. Equally destructive habit. But it's the lesser of two evils at the moment. I'll just flood my veins with nicotine. Maybe that'll help with the huge ball of guilt taking up residence in the pit of my stomach.
Everything okay?
Big tough hockey player that I am, I jump 3 feet in the air at the sound of Hannah's voice. I spin around and notice her standing at the sink, an empty glass in her hand. I was so out of it, I must have flown right past her during my sprint to the door. Christ, she's the last person I want to see at the moment. And look at that. She's wearing Garrett's jersey again. Just flaunting it in my face now, isn't she? Yeah, everything's fine, I mumble, stepping away from the door. Change of plans. Nicotine overdose. No longer needed. Hiding in my bedroom. Must get on that.
Logan?
She approaches me with wary strides.
What's going on?
Nothing.
Bullshit. You look upset. Are you okay?
I flinch when she touches my arm. I don't want to talk about it, Wellesley. I really don't. Her green eyes search my face for so long that I shift in discomfort and break the eye contact. I try to take another step, but she stops me again, blocking my path as she releases a groan of frustration.
You know what?
She announces.
I can't fucking take this anymore.
I blink in surprise. What are you talking about? Rather than answer, she grabs my arm so hard it's a miracle it stays in its socket. Then she drags me to the kitchen table and forcibly pushes me into a chair. Jeez, she's freakishly strong for someone so tiny. Hannah, I start uneasily.
No, I'm done tiptoeing around this.
She yanks out a chair and sits beside me.
Garrett keeps telling me you'll get over it, but it's only getting worse. And I hate this awkwardness between us. You used to hang out with us and come to Malone's and watch movies. And now you don't. And I miss hanging out with you, okay?
She's so upset that her shoulders are visibly shaking.
So let's clear the air, all right? Let's deal with it head on.
She takes a deep breath, then looks me square in the eye and asks,
Do you have a thing for me?
Oh, hell. Why didn't I go straight up to my room? Clenching my teeth, I scrape back my chair. Well, this has been fun, but I think I'll go upstairs and kill myself now.
Sit down,
she says sternly. My ass hovers over the chair, but the sharpness of her tone reminds me too much of Coach Jensen when he's reaming us out at practice, and my fear of authority wins out. I drop back down and blow out a tired breath. What's the point of talking about this, Wellesley? We both know the answer to that question.
Maybe, but I still want to hear you say it.
Annoyance tightens my throat. Fine, you want to hear it? Do I have a thing for you? Yes, I think I do. Shock fills her expression, as if she truly didn't expect me to reply. Cue the longest silence ever. Like, find a rope and tie it around your neck and hang your fucking self, silence. Because the longer she remains quiet, the more pathetic I feel. When she finally speaks, she throws me for a loop.
Why?
My forehead creases. Why what?
Why are you into me?
if she thought she was clarifying, she's dead wrong. Because I'm still baffled. What kind of question is that? Hannah shakes her head as if she's also trying to make sense of it.
Dude, I've seen the girls you bring home or flirt with at the bar. You have a type. Tall, skinny, usually blonde. And they're always hanging all over you and showering you with compliments.
She snorts. Whereas I just insult you all the time. I can't help but grin. Her sarcasm does veer into insult territory more often than not.
And you gravitate to the ones who are looking for something temporary. You know, a fun time. I'm not a fun time girl. I like serious relationships.
She purses her lips thoughtfully.
I never got the sense that you were interested in relationships.
The accusation raises my hackles. Why, because I'm a player? Indignation makes my tone harsher than I intend for it to be. Have you ever thought that maybe it's because I haven't met the right girl yet? But no, I couldn't possibly want someone to cuddle with and watch movies with. Someone who wears my jersey and cheers for me at games, and cooks dinner with me the way you and Garrett. Her snort of laughter makes me stop short. I narrow my eyes.
What are you laughing about?
In a heartbeat, the laughter dies, and her tone grows serious.
Logan, during that whole speech, you didn't once say you wanted to do that stuff with me. You said someone.
She beams.
I just got it.
Well, good for her, because I have no fucking idea what she's babbling about.
This entire time, I thought you were looking at me all longing-like. But you were looking at us.
She laughs again.
And all those things you listed right now, they're things Garrett and I do together. Dude, you don't want me. You want me and Garrett.
Alarm flits through me. If you're implying I want to have a threesome with you and my best friend, then I can assure you I don't.
No, you just want what we have. You want the connection and the closeness and all the gooey relationship stuff.
My mouth snaps shut.
Is she right?
As her words sink in, my muddled brain quickly runs through the fantasies I've had about Hannah these past few months and, well, if I'm being honest, most of them haven't been sexual. I mean, a few have, because I'm a guy and she's hot, and she's also around all the time, therefore providing me with readily available images for my spank bank. But aside from a few naked fantasies, I usually picture PG scenarios. Like I'll see her and Garrett snuggling on the couch and wish I was in his place. But am I wishing I'm in his place with her? Or in his place in general?
Look, I like you, Logan. I really do. You're funny and sweet, and you're a sarcastic jackass, which is a quality I happen to love in a guy. But you don't,
she looks uncomfortable,
make my heart pound. I guess that's the best way to put it. No, not even that.
Her voice takes on a faraway note.
When I'm with Garrett, my whole world comes alive. I'm so full of emotion, I feel like my heart will overflow. And I know this is going to sound like an exaggeration, or maybe kind of obsessive, but sometimes I think I need him more than I need food or oxygen.
She gazes into my eyes.
Do you need me more than oxygen, Logan?
I gulp.
Am I the last person you think about when you go to bed, and the first one you think about when you wake up?
I don't answer.
Am I?
She pushes. No. My voice comes out hoarse. You're not.
Fucking hell.
She might be right. All this time I've been feeling guilty about wanting my best friend's girl. But I think what I really wanted was my best friend's relationship. Someone to spend time with. Someone who turns me on and makes me laugh. Someone who makes me happy.
Like Grace?
The mocking thought slices into my mind like a damn lightsaber. Shit. Yeah, someone like Grace. Someone exactly like Grace. With her Ted Bundy rants and her calming presence and, hello, irony. I broke up with her to avoid getting into a serious relationship with her. And now it turns out that's what I wanted all along.
Damn it.
I screwed up. I rub my eyes, groaning softly.
That's not true. We're good, Logan. I promise.
No, I didn't screw up with us. I ended it with a really great girl tonight because I was so messed up in the head about all this.
Oh, shit.
She eyes me sympathetically. Why don't you call her and tell her you changed your mind? She kicked me out. I groan again. There's no way she'll pick up the phone if I call.
We're interrupted by Garrett's voice from the hall. Seriously, Wellesley, how long does it take you to get a glass of water? Do I need to show you how to use the sink? Because if so, that's just sad.
He quits talking the second he spots me.
Oh, hey man, I didn't know you were home.
I hastily slide off the chair and hop to my feet, but it does nothing to ease the suspicion in Garrett's eyes, which triggers a fresh rush of guilt. Jesus, does he think something happened between us? Does he honestly believe I'd ever, ever make a move on his girl? The fact that I'm even wondering that tells me the state of our friendship is even more precarious than I'd thought. Swallowing hard, I shuffle over to him. Listen, I'm sorry I've been such a dick lately. I was distracted.
Distracted?
He echoes skeptically. I nod. He keeps staring at me. My head's on straight now. Honest. Garrett peers past me, and although I can't see Hannah's face, whatever passes between them causes his broad shoulders to relax. Then he grins and slaps me on the arm.
Well, thank God, because I was seriously considering promoting Tuck to the number one best friend slot.
Are you kidding? Big mistake, G. He's a terrible wingman. Have you seen his beard?
I know, right?
And just like that, we're good again. Seriously, chicks need to take a lesson from dudes when it comes to burying the hatchet. We know our shit. Anyway, I need to make a call, I tell him. Night, guys. I'm already pulling up Grace's number as I dart out of the kitchen and head for the stairs. Texting isn't an option. I want her to hear my voice. I want her to hear how agonized I am about everything that went down tonight. To my frustration, the dial tone rings and rings and rings before switching over to voicemail. The second time I call, it goes straight to voicemail, which tells me she most likely pressed the ignore button. Crap. With a crushing sense of defeat, I open a new message and shoot her a text asking if we could talk. Then I go upstairs and wait. Chapter 14. Logan. It's past midnight, and still no word from Grace. I've sent her 3 texts already, and now I'm lying on top of my bedspread, staring up at the ceiling and valiantly fighting the urge to send a 4th. 3 messages borders on desperation. 4 would just be pathetic. Fuck, I wish she would text back, or call, or anything. At this point, I'd be thrilled if a carrier pigeon tapped its beak on my window and delivered a handwritten letter done in perfect calligraphy.
She's not calling you, man. Deal with it.
Yeah, I guess she isn't. I guess I really did blow it. And I guess I fucking deserve it. I didn't just lead her on. I led her right up to the point where she wanted to lose her virginity to me. And then I threw the offer back in her face and told her I was interested in someone else. Hell, I'm surprised I'm not experiencing random aches and pains in my body right now. You know, from the sharp needles Grace is poking into her voodoo doll. My phone buzzes, and I hurl myself at the night table like an Olympic high jumper. She texted back. Oh, thank fuck. That means she doesn't view me as the Antichrist. The message isn't from Grace. It comes from an unfamiliar number, and it takes me a solid 10 seconds before I'm able to register what I'm reading. No, what I'm seething over.
Hey, this is Ramona. Just heard what happened with you and Grace. Need me to come over and comfort you? Winky face.
Winky face. She actually fucking winky faced me. I drop the phone as if it's a hot coal. As if the message is contagious, and the mere act of touching the device it came on will turn me into a person as contemptible as the one who wrote those words. Why the hell is Grace's best friend hitting on me? Who does that? I'm so pissed off that I grab the phone and forward the message to Grace without stopping to question my actions. I add a caption. Thought you should see this. And
And then, since I'm already in this deep, I send another one that says, "Can we please talk?" She doesn't respond to either. Not now, and not by the time 3 in the morning rolls around, which is when I finally drag my pathetic ass under the covers and fall into a restless sleep.
Grace. I wake up at 5:30 in the morning, not by choice, but because my traitorous mind decides it's time for me to wallow in misery some more and forces me into consciousness. The humiliation of last night slaps me in the face the moment I open my eyes. The clothes I was wearing are still strewn on the floor. I hadn't bothered to pick them up, and neither had Ramona, who'd come home around midnight. Didn't happen. He's into someone else. That was all the information I gave her last night, and she must have seen the devastation on my face because for once in her life, she didn't nag me for details. She simply gave me a hug, a sympathetic squeeze on the arm, and climbed into bed. Now she's sleeping peacefully, her cheek pressed against her pillow, one arm flung across the mattress. Well, at least one of us is going to feel rested today. Despite my better judgment, I check my phone. Sure enough, there are 2 unread messages flashing on the screen, which brings the final tally to 5. Logan must really want to talk to me. I guess guilt turns some guys into real chatterboxes. A smart person would delete the messages without reading them. No, delete his number from the contact list. But I'm not feeling too smart right now. I feel stupid. So fucking stupid. For inviting him over last night, for developing feelings for him, for reading the messages he keeps sending. What the hell? I blink once, twice, 3 and 4 and 5 times, but it doesn't bring clarity to what I'm seeing. "Hey, this is Ramona. Just heard what happened with you and Grace. Need me to come over and comfort you?" Winky face. My head swings toward Ramona's bed. She's still out like a light. But that is unarguably her phone number next to the timestamp of the text. 12:16 a.m. Approximately 20 minutes after she'd gotten home last night. I stare at her sleeping form, waiting for the fury to come, for my insides to clench and my blood to boil with a sense of white-hot betrayal. But nothing happens. I'm cold and numb and so frickin' exhausted it feels like someone stuffed sand in my eyes. My fingers tremble as I bring up the next message. "Can we please talk?" "No, we can't. In fact, I don't want to talk to anyone right now, not Logan and certainly not Ramona." I suck an unsteady breath into my lungs. Then I stand up and creep toward the door. Stepping into the hall, I sag against the wall before sliding down to the floor and drawing my knees up. My phone rests on my knee, and I stare at it for several seconds before turning it over and accessing my contact list. It might be too early to call my dad, but in Paris, my mom will be wide awake and probably fixing lunch right now. The numbness doesn't go away as I dial her number. If anything, it gets worse. I can't even feel my heart beating. Maybe it's not. Maybe every goddamn part of me has shut down. "Sweetie!" My mother's overjoyed voice fills my ear. "What are you doing up so early?" I swallow. "Hey, Mom, I have an early class." "You have class on Sundays?" She sounds confused. "Oh, no, I don't. I meant I have a study group." Crap, my eyes are starting to sting, and not because I'm tired. Damn it. So much for being numb. I'm seconds away from bursting into tears. "Listen, I wanted to talk to you about my visit." My throat closes up and I take another breath, hoping to loosen it. "I changed my mind about the dates. I want to come earlier." "You do?" she says in delight. Oh, yay, I'm so happy. But are you sure? You said you might have plans with your friends. I don't want you to come early on my account. The plans got canceled, and I want to come sooner. I really do. I blink in rapid succession, trying to stop the tears from spilling over. The sooner, the better. Chapter 15. Grace. May. People say springtime in Paris is magical. They're right. The city has been my home for the past 2 weeks, and a part of me wishes I could stay here forever. Mom's apartment is in an area referred to as Old Paris. The neighborhood is gorgeous. Narrow, winding roads, old buildings, cute shops and bakeries at every corner. It's also known as the city's gay district, and her upstairs and downstairs neighbors are both gay couples who've already taken us out for dinner twice since I got here. The apartment only has one bedroom, but the pull-out couch in the living room is pretty comfortable. I love waking up to the sunlight streaming in from the French doors of the small balcony overlooking the building's inner courtyard. The faint traces of oil paint lingering in the room remind me of my childhood, back when my mother spent hours working in her studio. Over the years, she painted less and less, and she's admitted on more than one occasion that the loss of her art was one of the reasons she divorced my father. She felt like she'd lost touch with who she was, that being a housewife in small-town Massachusetts wasn't what she'd been destined for. A few months after I turned 16, she sat me down and posed a serious question. Would I rather have a mother who was miserable but close by, or happy and far away? I told her I wanted her to be happy. She's happy in Paris, there's no denying that. She laughs all the time, her smiles actually reach her eyes, and the dozens of bright canvases overflowing from the corner nook she's using as her studio prove that she's doing what she loves again. Morning! Mom waltzes out of her bedroom and greets me in a voice that contains the joyous trill of a Disney princess. Morning, I say groggily. The room has an open floor plan, so I can see her every move as she wanders over to the kitchen counter. Coffee? She calls out. Yes, please. I sit up and stretch, yawning as I grab my phone from the coffee table to check the time. Mom doesn't keep clocks in the house because she claims time weighs the mind down, but my OCD doesn't allow me to ever relax unless I know what time it is. 9:30. I have no idea what she has planned for us today, but I hope it doesn't involve too much walking because my feet are still sore from yesterday's 5-hour visit to the Louvre. I'm about to set down the phone when it rings in my hand, and I'm annoyed to see Ramona's name on the screen. It's 2:30 in the morning in Massachusetts. Doesn't she have anything better to do than keep harassing me? You know, like sleeping? Gritting my teeth, I drop the cell phone on the bed and let it ring. Mom eyes me from the counter. Which one, the boyfriend or the best friend? Ramona, I mutter. Who, by the way, I don't care to discuss, seeing as she's no longer my best friend, same way Logan isn't my boyfriend. And yet, they keep calling and texting, which means they both still care about you. Yeah, well, I don't care that they care. Ignoring Logan is a lot easier than ignoring Ramona, though. I knew him for a whopping total of 8 days. I've known her for 13 years. It's almost pathetic the way everything went down. You'd think a decade-plus-long friendship would end with a bang, but my showdown with Ramona was nothing more than a whimpering fizzle. Ramona had woken up, seen my face, and realized that Logan had forwarded me her message. Then she'd snapped into damage control mode, but none of her usual tricks had worked on me. The forgive me hug, the crocodile tears, she may as well have been tugging on the emotional heartstrings of a robot, I just stood there like a statue until she'd finally grasped that I wasn't buying the shit she was trying to sell. And the next day, I moved back home, telling my dad that the dorm was too loud and I needed somewhere quiet to study for exams. I haven't seen Ramona since. Why don't you hear her out? Mom's tone is cautious. I know you said she didn't have a good explanation before, but maybe that's changed. An explanation? Gee, how does one explain the betrayal of their closest friend? Oddly enough, Ramona hadn't even offered an excuse. No, I was jealous. No, I was drunk and wasn't thinking. All she'd done was sit on the edge of the bed and whisper, "I don't know why I did it, Gracie." Well, it wasn't good enough for me then, and it sure as hell isn't good enough now. I already told you I'm not interested in hearing her out. Not yet, anyway. I slide off the pullout and walk to the counter, reaching for the ceramic mug she hands me. I don't know if I'll ever be ready to talk to her again. Aw, sweetie, are you really going to throw away so many years of friendship over a boy? It's not about Logan. It's about the fact that she knew I was hurting. She knew I was humiliated over what happened with him, and instead of supporting me, she waited until I was asleep and then propositioned him. It's pretty clear she doesn't give a crap about me or my feelings. Mom sighs. I can't deny that Ramona has always been a bit self-absorbed. I snort. A bit? But she's also been your biggest supporter, Mom reminds me. She's always been there for you when you needed her. Remember when that nasty girl was bullying you in fifth grade? What was her name again? Brenda? Bryn? Brendan. Brendan. Lord, what is the matter with parents these days? Mom shakes her head in amazement. Anyway, remember when Bryn... Nope, I can't even say it. It's that stupid. When that girl was bullying you, Ramona was like a pit bull, snarling and spitting and ready to protect you to her dying breath. It's my turn to sigh. I know you're trying to be helpful, but can we please not talk about Ramona anymore? Okay, let's talk about the boy then, because I think you should call him back too. Agree to disagree, sweetie. He obviously feels bad about what happened, otherwise he wouldn't be trying to contact you. And, well, you were going to, give him your flower. I do a literal spit take. Coffee drizzles down my chin and neck, and I quickly grab a napkin to wipe it away before it stains my pajama top. Oh my God, Mom, don't ever say that again, I beg of you. I was trying to be parental, she says primly. There's parental, and then there's Victorian England. All right, you were going to fuck him. That's not parental either. A gale of laughter flies out, and it takes a second before I'm able to speak without giggling. Again, I know you're trying to help, but Logan's off the table too. Yes, I was considering having sex with him. No, it didn't happen, and that's all she wrote. Distress clouds her expression. Fine, I won't bug you about it anymore. But with that said, I refuse to let you spend the rest of the summer sulking. I haven't been sulking, I protest. Not on the outside, but I can see right through you, Grace Elizabeth Ivers. I know when you're smiling for real and when you're smiling for show, and so far you've given me 2 weeks of show smiles. She straightens up, a determined set to her shoulders. I think it's time we make you smile for real, I wanted us to go down to the canal today and walk along the river, but you know what? Emergency itinerary change. She claps her hands. We need to do something drastic. Crap. The last time she used the word drastic in conjunction with an outing, we went to a salon in Boston and she dyed her hair pink. Like what? I ask warily. We're paying a visit to Claudette. Who's Claudette? My hairdresser. Oh, God, I'm going to have pink hair. I just know it. Mom beams at me. Trust me, there's nothing like a good makeover to cheer a girl right up. She grabs the mug from my hand and sets it on the counter. Get dressed while I make the appointment. We are going to have so much fun today.
Chapter 16. Logan. June. I'm 33 days into my torture stint at Logan & Sons when I have my first run-in with my father. I've been waiting for it. In some sick way, even looking forward to it. But for the most part, Dad has left me alone since I moved back home. He hasn't asked me about school or hockey. Hasn't given me the usual guilt trips about how I don't care enough to visit. All he's done is complain about his leg pain and thrust beers in my direction while pleading, "Have a brewski with your old man, Johnny." Right. Like that'll ever happen. I appreciate that he hasn't been on my case, though. Truth is, I'm too exhausted to fight with him right now. I've been following the rigid off-season training program the coach has designed for us, which means getting up at the crack of dawn to work out, toiling in the garage until 8 p.m., working out again before bed, and then crashing for the night and doing it all over again the next day. Once a week, I go to Munson's crappy arena to work on shooting and skating drills with Vic, one of our assistant coaches who drives over from Briar to make sure I stay sharp. I love him for it, and I look forward to the ice time. But unfortunately, today's not a rink day. The customer I'm dealing with at the moment is the foreman of the sole construction crew in town. His name's Bernie, and he's a decent guy. Well, if you overlook his constant attempts to persuade me to join Munson's summer hockey league, which I have no desire to do. Bernie showed up 5 minutes ago with a 2-inch nail jammed in the front tire of his pickup, gave me the usual spiel about how I need to join the league, and now we're discussing the options for his repairs. Look, I can easily patch you up, I tell him. I'll pull the nail out, plug it up, and fill up the tire, which is definitely the cheaper and quicker option. But your tires aren't in the greatest shape, Bern. When was the last time you replaced them? He rubs his bushy salt and pepper beard. 5 years ago? Maybe 6? I kneel next to the left front tire and give it another quick examination. The tread on all 4 tires is starting to wear. You're not down to 1/16 of an inch yet, but it's getting damn close. A few more months, and they might not be safe to drive on anymore. Ah, kid, I don't have the money to replace them right now. Besides, the crew's working a big job over in Brockton. He gives the hood a hearty thump. I need this baby with me every day this week. Just do the patch for now. You sure? Because you'll have to come back again when the tread is gone. I recommend doing it now. He dismisses the suggestion by waving one meaty hand. We'll do it next time. I nod without argument. First rule of service, the customer is always right. Besides, it's not like his tires are going to explode in the next few hours. It'll still be a long while before the tread is completely worn. All right, I'll do it now. It should only take about 10 minutes, but I've got to finish the alignment on this Jetta first, so more like 30. You want to wait in the office? Nah, I'll walk around and smoke. I have some phone calls to make. He glares at me. And for the love of God, we need you on the ice Thursday nights, kid. Think about it, okay? I nod again, but we both know what my answer will be. Every year, the Munson Miners extend an invitation, and every year, I turn them down. Honestly, it's too depressing to even consider. It's just a reminder that next year, I'll be going from a Division I team to the Munson Miners, Yep, I'll be the star player of an amateur league. On a team that's named after an activity this town isn't even known for. There are no mines in Munson, and never have been. Less than a minute after Bernie wanders outside, my father emerges from the office and limps over to me. His hands are blessedly devoid of any alcoholic containers. At least he has better sense than to drink in front of our customers. "The fuck was that?" he demands. So much for shielding the customers. He's slurring like crazy and swaying on his cane, and suddenly I'm glad he's been holed up in the office all day, out of sight. I stifle a sigh. "What are you talking about? Where was the upsell?" His cheeks are flushed in outrage, and even though I've been back home for more than a month, I'm still startled by how gaunt he looks. It's as if all the skin from his face, arms, and torso decided to move to his gut, forming an incredibly unflattering beer belly that protrudes beneath his threadbare t-shirt. Other than the paunch, he's skinny as a rail, and it makes me sad to see him this way. I've seen pictures of him when he was younger, and I can't deny he used to be handsome. And I have memories of him when he was sober, when he was quick to smile, always armed with a joke or a laugh. I miss that man. Christ, I really fucking miss him sometimes. "A 30-buck patch job instead of 4 new tires?" he fumes. "What the hell is wrong with you?" I struggle to control my temper. I recommended new tires. He didn't want them. "You don't recommend. You push it on them. You shove it down their fucking throats." I sneak a worried peek in Bernie's direction. But fortunately, he's all the way at the front of the driveway, sucking on a cigarette as he talks into his phone. Jesus. What if he'd been in earshot? Would my father have been able to restrain himself from saying this kind of shit in front of a loyal customer? I honestly don't know. It's only 1:30 in the afternoon and he's staggering on his feet as if he's consumed the entire stock of a liquor store. "Why don't you go back to the house?" I say softly. "You're stumbling a little. Do your legs hurt?"
"I'm not hurt. I'm pithed."
He says it like pithed. Awesome. He's so drunk he's lisping now.
"What you even doing here if you're gonna throw money away like it grows on trees? You tell him the tires are unsafe. You don't stand around and talk about your fucking hockey team."
"We weren't talking about hockey, Dad."
"Bullshit, I heard ya."
The man who used to come to all my 9th grade hockey games and sit behind the home bench cheering his lungs out, he now smirks at me.
"Think you're a big hockey star, don't you, Johnny? But nah, you ain't. If you're so good, why didn't anyone draft you?"
My chest tightens.
"Dad?"
The quiet warning comes from Jeff, who wipes his grease-covered hands with a rag and marches up to us.
"Stay out of this, Jeffy. I'm talking to your big brother,"
Dad blinks.
"Little brother, I mean. He's the younger one, right?"
Jeff and I exchange a look.
Shit,
he's really out of it. Usually one of us monitors him throughout the day, but we've been swamped since the second we opened up shop this morning. I hadn't been too worried because Dad was in the office, but now I curse myself for forgetting an important rule in the alcoholic handbook. Always have booze on hand. He must keep his stash hidden in the office, same way he hid his alcohol when he and Mom were still together. One time when I was 12, the toilet was running, so I went upstairs to fix it. And when I lifted the lid, I found a Mickey of vodka floating around in the tank. Just another day in the Logan household.
"You look tired,"
Jeff says, firmly grasping our father's arm.
"Why don't you go back to the house and take a nap?"
He blinks again, confusion eclipsing the anger. For a moment, he looks like a lost little boy, and suddenly I feel like bawling. It's times like these when I want to grab his shoulders and shake him. Beg him to make me understand why he drinks. My mom says it's genetic, and I know Dad's side of the family has a history of depression as well as alcoholism. And fuck, maybe that's it. Maybe those really are the reasons he can't stop drinking. But a part of me still can't fully accept that. He had a good childhood, damn it. He had a wife who loved him, 2 sons who did whatever they could to please him. Why couldn't that be enough for him? I know he's an addict. I know he's sick. It's just so hard to put myself in that mind frame. in that place where a bottle of booze is the most important thing in your life. So much so that you're willing to throw away everything else for it.
I guess I'm a little tired, Dad mumbles, his blue eyes still cloudy with confusion. I'll go to sleep now.
My brother and I watch as he hobbles off, and then Jeff turns to me with a sad look.
Don't listen to him. You are good.
Yeah, sure. I clench my jaw and stalk back to the lift, where the sporty Jetta I've been working on awaits me. I need to finish up.
John, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Forget it, I mutter. I already have. I close up later than usual, much later than usual, because when 8 o'clock rolled around, I couldn't stomach the thought of going to the house for dinner. Jeff popped in around 9 to bring me some leftover meatloaf and quietly informed me that Dad had sobered up a bit, which is laughable. Because even if he quit cold turkey this very second, there's so much alcohol flowing through his veins that it would take days for it to exit his system. Now it's 10:15, and I'm hoping Dad will be asleep when I walk through that door. No, I'm praying. I don't have the energy to deal with him right now. I leave the shop through the side door, stopping to drop the keys of the Jetta into the little mailbox nailed to the wall. Its owner, a cute brunette who teaches at Munson Elementary, is supposed to pick up the car tonight, and I already parked it outside for her in the designated area. I double-check the padlock on the garage door, then turn toward the path to the house just as headlights slice through the trees, and a taxi speeds up the driveway. An older man sits behind the wheel, eyeing me warily as the back door of the cab opens, and Tori Howard hops out, her high-heeled boots raising a cloud of dust when they meet the dirt. She waves when she spots me, then gestures to the driver that it's okay to go. A second later, she sways her curvy hips my way. Tori is in her mid-20s and absolutely gorgeous. She moved to Munson a couple of years ago and brings her car to be serviced a few times a year. And believe me, that car is not the only thing she wants serviced. She hits on me every time I see her, but I haven't taken her up on her very blatant offers, because Jeff is usually around when she shows up, and I don't want him to think I'm sleeping with the customers. But tonight, it's just the two of us, with no Jeff in sight. A smile lifts the corners of her mouth as she approaches me.
Hey.
Hey, I nod at the retreating taillights of the cab. You should have told me you didn't have a ride. Jeff or I could have picked you up.
Oh, really? I had no idea this was a full-service joint,
she teases. I shrug. We aim to please. Her smile widens, and I realize how sleazy that lighthearted comment had sounded. I hadn't been trying to flirt, but her eyes are gleaming seductively now. I suddenly notice they're almost the same shade of brown as Grace's eyes, except Grace never looked at me like she wanted to gobble me up and ask for seconds. There'd been something earnest about her gaze. There was heat, sure, but it wasn't as calculated and overt as the way Tori is gazing at me right now. And shit, I really need to quit thinking about Grace. I can't even count how many times I've called her this summer. But her continued silence tells me everything I need to know. She doesn't want to hear my apologies. She doesn't want to see me again. Yet I can't fight the hope that maybe she'll change her mind.
You know, you get better looking every time I see you,
Tori drawls. I doubt it. If anything, I just get more tired, and I'm pretty sure there's a streak of oil on my cheek at the moment. But Tori doesn't seem to mind. She pouts.
What, you're not going to return the compliment?
I can't help but grin. Tori, you're gorgeous, and you know it. You don't need me to tell you that.
No, but sometimes it's nice to hear it.
I'm not sure how I feel about the direction this conversation is going, so I changed the subject. You got my message, right? I explained everything we did to the car, but I can run through it with you again if you want.
No need. It sounds like you were very thorough.
She slants her head.
So, do you have big plans tonight?
Nope. Gonna take a shower and crash. It's been a long day, and it'll be an even longer one tomorrow.
A shower, huh? You know, she says casually, I just got a second shower head installed in my shower.
And there's nothing casual about the end of that sentence.
I always see it in the movies, these incredible looking showers with a million shower heads. And I was like, why can't I have that? And then I realized, I absolutely can.
She grins.
So I called a plumber, and he came by last week and installed it. I can't even describe how amazing it is. Water spraying you front and back, it's glorious.
And my dick is semi-hard now. I'm not about to get all self-judgy, though, because one, I haven't had sex in almost 3 months, and two, when a beautiful woman is talking about her shower, there's something wrong with you if your brain doesn't conjure up the image of her in that shower, naked, with water spraying her, front and back.
You should come over and check it out sometime, she says,
and her wink is about as subtle as a slap on the ass. Hesitation rises in my chest. Any other time, I'd invite myself into her shower in a heartbeat, but I'm still holding on to hope that Grace might...
Might what?
Text me? Accept my apology? Even if she does, that doesn't mean she'll want to go out with me. Hell, why would she? She wanted to fuck me, and I rejected her. As my silence drags, Tori lets out a sigh.
I've heard the rumors about you, Logan, and I've got to say, I'm disappointed that they're not true.
I narrow my eyes.
What rumors? You know, that you're sex on a stick? Up for anything? Good in bed?
She gives me a sassy grin.
Or maybe all of it is true, and you're just not into older women. But I'll have you know, I polled some friends, and they all concurred that a 6-year age difference does not make me a cougar.
A laugh pops out. You're definitely not a cougar, Tori.
Then I guess I'm not your type.
My gaze wanders over the perky tits beneath her tight shirt, and the shapely legs that go on forever. Not my type? Yeah, right. She's exactly the kind of woman I'm normally attracted to. So what the hell is stopping me? Grace? Because after months of radio silence, maybe it's time for me to finally take the hint. Nah, that's not true, I say nonchalantly. You usually catch me when I'm distracted.
Well, are you distracted now?
Nope. In fact, my gaze lingers on her chest again before meeting her eyes. I could really go for a shower. Chapter 17. Logan. July. Garrett surprises me by showing up at the garage on a Thursday night with pizza and a six-pack. I don't see much of him during the summer. What with me living at home and him working 60-hour weeks at a construction company in Boston. We text here and there, usually about the NHL playoffs. We get together to watch the Stanley Cup game every year, which we did last month. But for the most part, our friendship goes on hiatus until I head back to Hastings in September. I'm happy to see him, though. I'd probably be happier if he hadn't brought beer. But hey, how is Garrett supposed to know that my father whipped a beer can at my head this morning? Yep, shit got real today. Dad threw a can and a tantrum, which resulted in me nearly taking a swing at him. Jeff, of course, broke it up and played peacekeeper, before dragging Dad's drunken ass home. When I popped in for lunch, the old man was drinking Bud Lights in the living room and watching infomercials, greeting me with a smile that told me he'd already forgotten what had happened. Hey, Garrett strides up to the Hyundai whose brake pads I just replaced and gives me a macho man hug that involves many a backslap. Then he glances across the room at my brother. Jeff, my man. Long time. Gee. Jeff sets down his socket wrench and wanders over to shake Garrett's hand. Where the hell have you been hiding this summer? Boston. I've spent the past 2 weeks slaving away on a roof with the sun beating down on my head. I grin when I notice the sunburn on his nose, neck, and shoulders. And because I'm an ass, I lean in and flick the red patch of his skin on his left shoulder. He winces. Fuck you. That hurt. Poor baby. You should ask Wellesley to rub aloe on your boo-boos. He gives a wolfish smile,
Oh, trust me, she has. Which already makes her a way better roommate than you.
Roommate? Oh, right. I totally forgot that Hannah's been staying at our place for the summer.
Which reminds me that the guys and I should probably talk about what's going to happen in the fall. If Hannah's planning on moving in officially. I'm totally over her. And yeah, I love her company. But I also love the dynamic we have going. Just us guys. Injecting a dose of estrogen into the system might short-circuit it or something.
Can you take a break? Garrett asks.
You too, Jeff. There's enough pizza for three.
I hesitate, picturing my dad's reaction if he wanders outside and sees me chilling with my buddy instead of working.
Fuck. I'm not in the mood to throw down with him again.
Jeff, however, answers before I can.
Don't worry. John's done for the night.
I look over in surprise.
Seriously, I've got this, my brother tells me. I'll finish up here. You take G around back and relax.
You sure?
Jeff repeats himself, his tone firm. I've got this.
I nod in thanks, then strip off my coveralls and leave the garage with Garrett on my tail. We walk down the path leading to the house, but right before we reach the sprawling bungalow, I veer off toward the grassy clearing at the far edge of the property. Years ago, Jeff and I had set up a fire pit out there and surrounded it with a semicircle of Adirondack chairs. And in the woods beyond the clearing, there's a treehouse we built when we were kids, which any housing inspector worth his salt would condemn, thanks to its shoddy workmanship and unstable facade. Garrett sets the pizza box on the rickety wood table between two of the chairs, then picks up the six-pack, tugs a can off the plastic ring, and tosses it at me. I catch it, but don't open it.
Right, I forgot, Garrett says dryly. Beer is for pussies.
He rolls his eyes.
There are no chicks around, man. You don't have to pretend to be all sophisticated.
Sophisticated? Ha! My friends know I don't drink beer unless it's the only option available. But I've always claimed my dislike for it stems from the fact that beer is weak and tastes like shit. The truth? The smell serves as a depressing reminder of my childhood. So does the taste of bourbon, Dad's backup beverage once he runs out of beer. Just don't feel like drinking right now. I place the can on the dirt and accept the bacon-loaded pizza slice he hands me.
Thanks.
Garrett flops in the chair and reaches for a slice.
So how crazy is it about Connor? First round pick. That's got to be good for his ego.
A bittersweet feeling washes over me. The NHL entry draft took place a couple of weeks ago, and I was thrilled to hear that two Brier players made the cut. The Kings snapped up Connor Treanor in the first round, while the Blackhawks drafted one of our D-men, Joe Rogers, in the fourth. I'm damn proud of my guys. They're both sophomores. Both talented players who deserve to be in the league. But at the same time, it's yet another reminder that I won't be in the league.
Connor earned that first round pick. The kid is faster than lightning.
Garrett chews slowly, a thoughtful glimmer in his eyes.
What about Rogers?
Think he'll make the Hawks roster? Or get sent down to the farm team? I mull it over.
Farm team, I answer, albeit reluctantly. I think they'll want to develop him more before they set him loose on the world.
Yeah, me too. He's not the best stick handler, and too many of his passes don't connect. We continue talking hockey as we devour the entire pizza, and eventually I crank open the beer, though I only take a sip or two. I'm not looking for a buzz tonight. Actually, I haven't felt like partying at all lately. If I'm being honest, my mood's been in the dumpster since that night with Tori last month.
So what's Wellesley planning to do in the fall? I ask him.
Is she moving in or what?
Garrett is quick to shake his head.
Nope. First off, I would have asked you guys if it was cool before making that kind of decision. But she doesn't want to anyway. It made sense for the summer because our place is so close to her work. But she and Allie are definitely rooming together again when the semester starts.
Does she know yet what she wants to do after graduation?
No clue. She's got a whole year to figure it out, though.
Garrett goes quiet for a beat.
Hey, you know Wellesley's friend Meg?
I nod,
picturing the pretty drama major who, last I remember, has a boyfriend who's kind of a douche. Yeah. She's going out with that Jimmy guy, right? Jeremy. And they broke up. Garrett hesitates again. Hannah asked if maybe you wanted her to set you two up. Meg's fun. You might like her. I shift in my chair, uncomfortable. Thanks for the offer, but I'm not interested in a setup. He brightens. Does that mean the freshman you've been obsessing over finally decided to forgive you? After the Stanley Cup game, I'd confessed to Garrett about the whole Grace situation. The whiskey I'd consumed loosening my tongue and causing me to give him a sordid play-by-play of V-Night, which is what I'm calling that final hookup. Now I regret telling him, because talking about her brings an ache to my chest. She still won't talk to me, I admit. It's over, man. Shit. That sucks. So I assume you're back to drilling anything in a skirt? No. My turn to pause. I almost slept with this older chick a few weeks ago. He grins. How much older? She's 27, I think. She's a teacher here in town. Smoking hot. Nice. Are you... Wait, what do you mean almost? I awkwardly sip my beer. Couldn't go through with it. He looks startled. Why not? Because it was... I struggle to find the right adjective to describe that disastrous night with Tori. I don't know. I went back to her place, fully intending to fuck her brains out. But when she tried to kiss me, I just bailed. It felt empty, I guess. Empty, he echoes, sounding bewildered. What does that mean? Fuck if I can explain it. Since I started college, I haven't passed up many opportunities to get laid. The way I saw it, I might as well live in the moment and take all the pleasure I can get. Because tomorrow I'm going to be a goddamn mechanic, living a hollow existence in the shithole that is Munson. But the night I went to Tori's was equally hollow. I raise the beer to my lips again, but this time I down half the can. Christ, everything about my life depresses the shit out of me. Garrett watches me, deep concern etched into his face. What's going on, man? Nothing. Bullshit. You look like your dog just died. He abruptly glances around the clearing. Oh shit, did your dog die? Do you have a dog? I suddenly realized I know nothing about your life here. He's right. This is only the second time he's been here in the 3 years I've known him. I've always made sure to keep my home life separate from my school one. Not that Garrett wouldn't be able to relate. I mean, his father isn't exactly a prince either. A part of me is still shocked that Garrett's father used to hit him. Phil Graham is hockey royalty around these parts, and I used to idolize him when I was growing up. But ever since Garrett told me about the abuse, I can't even hear the man's name without wanting to shove a skate in his chest and twist. Hard. So yeah, I guess I could have shared my own crappy upbringing when Garrett shared his. I could have told him about my father's drinking, but I hadn't, because it's not something I like to talk about. But right now, I'm tired of keeping it all inside. You want to know about my life here? I say flatly. Two words, it sucks. Garrett rests his beer on his knee and meets my eyes. How so? My dad's a raging alcoholic, G. He hisses out of breath. Are you serious? I nod. Why didn't you tell me this before? He shakes his head, looking upset. Because it's not a big deal, I shrug. It's the way things are. He falls on and off the wagon. He makes messes, and we clean them up. Is that why you and Jeff are practically running his business for him? Yep. I take a breath. Screw it. If it's confession time, then there's no point half-assing it. I'll be working here full-time next year. What do you mean? Garrett's mouth puckers in a frown. Wait, because of the draft? I already told you. I interrupt him. I didn't make myself eligible. Shock and hurt mingle in his eyes to create a dark cloud. Are you fucking serious? I nod. Why the hell didn't you say anything? Because I didn't want you trying to change my mind. I knew the day I accepted the scholarship to Briar that I wouldn't be going pro.
But,
he's sputtering now,
what about all that talk about you and me in Bruins jerseys?
Just talk, G. My tone is as miserable as my future. Jeff and I made a deal. He works here while I'm at school, and then we switch off.
That's bullshit,
Garrett says again, vehemently this time. No, it's life. Jeff did his time. Now it's my turn. Someone has to, or else my dad will lose his business. And the house, and...
And that's his problem,
Garrett interjects, his gray eyes blazing.
I don't mean to sound insensitive, but it's true. It's not your responsibility to take care of him.
Yes, it is. He's my dad, regret seizes my throat. He might be a drunk, and a total asshole sometimes, but he's sick, G. And he got in a car accident a few years back and fucked up his legs pretty bad. So now he has chronic pain and can barely walk. I swallow, trying to tamp down the sorrow. Maybe we'll be able to get him back to rehab one day. Maybe not. Either way, I need to step up and take care of him. It won't be forever.
How long, then?
Until Jeff gets the travel bug out of his system, I say weakly. He and his girlfriend are going to spend a few years trekking through Europe, and then they're coming back and settling in Hastings. Jeff will run the garage again, and I'll be free. Disbelief drips from Garrett's voice.
So you're putting your life on hold? For years?
Yes. The silence that follows only heightens my discomfort. I know Garrett disapproves of my plans, but there's nothing I can do about that. Jeff and I had a deal, and I have no choice but to stick to it.
You never had any intention of calling that agent?
No, I confess. His jaw tightens. Then he lets out a heavy breath that has him sagging forward. He rakes one hand over his scalp.
I wish you told me all this before. If I'd known, I wouldn't have harassed you about the pros all year.
Tell you that my future is as bleak as a prison sentence?
No,
that it pretty much is a prison sentence?
I don't even like to think about it, G.
I stare straight ahead at nothing in particular. The sun has already set, but there's still some light in the sky, giving me a perfect view of the property. The outdated bungalow and dandelion-riddled lawn. The backdrop to the life I'm going to lead after I graduate.
Is this why you've been partying like there's no tomorrow?
Garrett demands.
Because you believe there literally isn't a tomorrow?
Look around, man. I gesture to the sun-browned grass and old tires strewn on the dirt. This is my tomorrow. He sighs.
So what? You knew you weren't going to have the NHL experience, so you figured, hey, might as well take advantage of the minor celebrity college status and enjoy this constant stream of easy pussy?
Garrett looks like he's trying not to laugh.
Please don't tell me you've been playing hockey since you could walk for the sole purpose of getting laid.
I scowl at him.
Of course not. That's just a perk. A perk, huh? Then what are you doing lusting over a relationship?
He arches a brow.
Yeah, she told me.
What exactly are we discussing here, G? My sex life? Because I thought we were talking about my future. Which, by the way, is a fucking joke, okay? I don't have a damn thing to look forward to. No hockey, no girls, no choices.
That's not true.
He pauses.
You've got a year.
A crease digs into my forehead.
What? You've got a whole year, John. Your senior year. For one more year, you do have choices. You have hockey and your friends. And if you want a girlfriend, you can have that too.
He snorts.
But that means keeping your dick out of party girls who have the IQ of a hockey stick.
I bite the inside of my cheek.
You want my advice?
Sincerity shines in his eyes.
If I knew I had 1 year left before I was about to say had to, but I maintain that you don't have to do anything. You choose to, but whatever, you've made your choice. But if I knew I had to put my life on hold starting next year, I'd make the most of the time I had left. Stop doing things that make you feel empty. Have fun. Make things right with that girl, if that's what'll make you happy. Quit sulking and make the most of your senior year. I'm not sulking.
Yeah, well, you're not doing anything productive either.
I chew on my cheek until I've drawn blood, but I barely notice the coppery flavor that fills my mouth. I've been treating this upcoming year like a death sentence, but maybe Garrett's right. Maybe I need to start viewing it as an opportunity. One more year to enjoy my freedom, to play the game I love, to hang out with friends I'm lucky to have and probably don't deserve. Freedom, hockey, and friends. Yep, all those things make the list. But the number one slot? That's a no-brainer. I need to make things right with Grace.
Chapter 18. Logan. August. There's one more week before the new semester starts, and I'm finally seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. Though, if I'm being honest, the tail end of the summer wasn't all that shitty. I spent a week in Boston visiting my mom, didn't have any major run-ins with my dad, and I even ended up calling Bernie and playing a few games with the minors. Turns out the players are actually pretty decent. Most of them are in their 30s, a few are in their 40s, and I, being the only 21-year-old, schooled each and every one of them on the ice. But it felt good to be part of a team again. The one dark spot on an otherwise mostly painless summer record is that Grace hadn't called. After my talk with Garrett, I left her a long voicemail apologizing again and asking for another chance. No response. Still, she can't avoid me forever. I'm bound to run into her on campus, or I can always speed up the process by flirting with the hot grad student in the housing office to find out which dorm Grace will be in. My last resort would be calling her friend Ramona, but I refuse to do that unless I absolutely have to. But all that can wait. I have the afternoon off today, and my spirits are high as I drive to Hastings. My strength and conditioning program requires increased weight training now, but since I have the worst selection of weights at home, Jeff agreed to cover for me twice a week so I can use the state-of-the-art weight room in our team facilities on campus. Dean has been tagging along with me, and when I pull up in front of our townhouse, he's waiting for me in the driveway. Mr. GQ is shirtless, wearing low-riding Adidas tearaway pants and jogging in place like a moron. Grinning, I hop out of the truck and walk over to him. "Hey, change of plans," he says. "Wellesley got off work early, so we're going running instead." I wrinkle my nose. "You and me?" "You, me, and Wellesley," he clarifies. "She and I have been running every night. Sometimes G comes if he's not too beat, but she has plans with her folks tonight." "Nice. Her parents are in town?" "I know Hannah doesn't get to see them as often as she'd like, so I imagine she must be thrilled."